While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the
eye. A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I will be keeping you company from now up until 14:30. Now, of course, today is the 4th of March, 2026, and we have now officially stepped into the rhythm of a brand new month. Now, March is no longer about setting New Year's resolutions. It is about measuring momentum. It is about asking, are the plans we made in January working? Are budgets holding? Are strategies delivering? Now, for many Namibians, at the beginning of March signals a recalibration. Businesses are reviewing first quarter performance. Entrepreneurs are readjusting to shifting market realities. And households are reassessing spending patterns after the first 2 months of the year. And across the public sector, policies and programs are moving from planning tables to implementation phases. Now, right here on the radar, a new month means shaping our focus, or shaping your focus. We go beyond the headlines. So now we unpack the economic indicators. We examine policy decisions and analyze where opportunities are emerging and where caution may be required. Now, most importantly, we connect national developments directly to your everyday life. Now, March is known as a momentum month. It is when early ambitions meet real-world conditions. Wondering whether growth targets are realistic or if investment confidence is actually improving, and how global trending influences Namibia's outlook, as well as what you and I, or as a business owner, a professional, a student, or a policy maker, or perhaps an investor, should be watching for right now. So from governance updates and development priorities to youth innovation and private sector expansion, this platform is about connecting the dots in a way that keeps Namibia informed and empowered. And of course, as always, your voice matters. So do join in on the conversation. Follow us on Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp channel for your try weekly dose of news as well. Now, whether you're tuning in from the capital city of Windhoek, the harbor town of Walvis Bay, Oshakati, Ongwediva in the north, or Mariental and Grootfontein in our farming communities, wherever you are commuting, picking up the kids from school, this is your platform, your conversation, and yes, your radar, as keeps you informed with news analysis. And with that, let's get right in today's news analysis. The Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board last week officially launched the Namibia Investment Guide, a new multi-volume resource that was designed to streamline the investment process and better position Namibia as an attractive destination for both domestic and foreign investors. Now, the launch ceremony was presided by the Minister by the Deputy Minister of International Relations and Trade, Jerry Matundu, who described the guide as a more than just a document, but a strategic marketing and facilitation tool that would support investor in decision making. And I quote, this document gives information about Namibia, its economic sectors, and the processes involved in registering and doing business. It could not have come at a better time, she said, highlighting the government's commitment to policy certainty and investor confidence. Now, the Namibia Investor Guide consists of 7 volumes, the first of which, a country profile and key economic overview, was unveiled at the launch event. Additionally, volumes that cover critical areas such as investment climate, business registration processes, immigration and labor frameworks, tax and banking regulations, and land access procedures. Jessica Uwa Hawanga, acting CEO of NIPDB, emphasized that the guide is the culmination of months of research and collaboration will serve as a trusted source of credible information for investors. According to Awanga, one of the main barriers to investment uncertainty around the regulatory and procedural requirements is one of those, and it can be reduced by providing clear, consolidated guidance. Now, the launch aligns with the broader government efforts to modernize the investment framework in Namibia. Now, questions we will be asking are that, how is this investor guide set to help local businesses? How are they going to be able to understand it better and also then be able to tap into the wealth of Namibia? Let's now pause here and call up our guest that we're going to interrogate or actually get into conversation with. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ningefata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali. Ileko berewa nora hetatu natu mbali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye. Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ningefa Tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali. Ileko mberewa nora hetatu natu mbali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and now joining us telephonically is Mr. Andrew Ngishitile, who is a researcher and also a trade analyst. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Ngishitile, and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon, Yujo, and good afternoon to the listeners. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is all mine. And of course, we know that the Ministry of Trade and Ministry of International Relations and Trade has officially launched the Namibia Investment Guide. Of course, this is intended to guide investors, whether foreigners, foreign investors, or domestic investors. Overall, what do you make of this guide that has been launched? What is the first thing that comes to your mind as you hear that?
Yeah, it's a good thing to giving us a clear picture what is really they want us to be investing on. Because if you look at the local investors, and they don't know really much what type of activity do they need to venture, so that they cannot hitting each other with the foreign one, which is the especially if you're looking on this supermarket thing, there are a lot of foreigners that are taking over from the Namibians, which I really don't look at as a good guide to the Namibians, because we are all selling the product that is not as who manufactured. We are all importing whatever we are servicing to the Namibians, which is not really protecting the Namibians when it comes to that, because some of these are well prepared. Like now, if you look at those jobs, ShopRite and others, they are really a powerful guy to do the service. So in Namibians now, no matter you want to venture in that, with your small muscle, it may end up not work. So for this launching, it's a good clear picture for Namibians also to intervene and asking questions that, yeah, and also in the natural resources where we are also not, Namibians are not getting an opportunity because of the fund that is, billions of dollars that's needing to be pumping in, for example, to open up a mine, you're needing a lot of money.
Yeah.
We're talking about US dollar. So, yes, it's a good for the foreigners, but it's not good for the Namibians because we need to have where you can ask us that this is what we are expecting Namibians to do. In terms of the percentage in that, the importing percentage that we are having in hand from NSI, that most of the foods that we are consuming is come from outside.
That's true.
So those are the problems that we have.
Mm-hmm. Now, the first volume of the Namibia Investment Guide is a country's profile and key economic overview. Do you think perhaps this also then gives opportunity for domestic investors to understand Namibia as a whole? Because sometimes, yes, you can be in a country, but not really understand its economic overview and we are rigging behind so that you can come in and fill that gap. Or perhaps would you say it might favor more or give somewhat an overview that mostly would sort of attract foreign investment as opposed to domestic investors?
Yes, as I said at the beginning, that the profile of Namibia out there since 1996, it opened up more doors into the foreigners. It's a very, cool hub of investment where you are more protected, more foreign protected into around about the local, but when you are talking about the foreigners, yes, there is a lot of companies that is a venture with Namibia. If you look at even the time of these Ramatex and you look at the time of those Indians guys and that they were
Baden Motors.
The one, yeah, the one that is they setting up a supermarket. That was what was that? Some guys from India.
Okay.
You know where Namika is now. And you know where Metro is in Krenkupe. It was for the Indians and that, and they put in that infrastructure. So yeah, then they come and they competing with the South African companies, ShopRite and Pick and Pay and the others. So it's for the Namibians, as I say, for the Namibians that they have money now to buy, the stake maybe on those companies that are coming in. I think the investment board needing to also to ask me these companies whether in Namibia there is any Namibians that they want to invest in on those or be a partner up with those guys, and so that we can also be a part of that because of the currents that we are having. If you look at in the setup of the mine, as I said, we are talking about US dollar, we are not talking about Namibian dollar.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about $5 million, I don't know whether we have a lot of people that they have that money.
Sure.
So those are the problems that we have. Yeah, but in terms of the profile, yeah, Namibia is doing very good. Comparing, no matter geopolitics in parliament is also scary to look at the movement of that. Yeah, this one they are pulling on communism style, which we. Namibia is a country, it's on a capitalism country, so it might end up not work for the geopolitics. Yeah, some they are scared of what if the political change in a few years to come, no matter how powerful the political party, the ruling political party protecting those investors. Yeah, it might end up also giving other pictures. But to look at the Namibians, the local now, is where, yeah, maybe they can invest their money, as I said, in the stock exchange, or they can invest their money on GIPF so that you can channel it in the right place. But for them to be venturing on their own muscle, I don't think it will work, because these are the well-prepared guys that are coming in Namibia.
Mm. Now, there's one particular point that you mentioned there that I want to pick, is so to say that, if I get it right, you're saying local businesses perhaps, or local investors could perhaps tag along to have to work along foreign investors. Am I correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Now, apart from that, which I also believe should, if for instance we are giving an opportunity to an investor outside, maybe it will also be nice to say tag along this particular company so that local people can also benefit and understand also the nature of business of that particular business that you're getting into, so that tomorrow, if you so happen that your investment time is over and you're no longer, perhaps we have achieved a common goal and you're going back, now Namibians can continue where you left off, or actually then do even better. So, but then apart from that particular line, which other way do you think domestic investors can then benefit? I mean, not everybody wants to invest their money in GIPF. Some actually want mm-hmm. to be really at the it forefront of things.
There is a lot of opportunity for the local. For example, if you look at in agriculture, especially on beef industry, it's also doing good if you venture with the other big guys, like in Texas guys or Australian guys or Argentinian guys, and then you come to get rid of food and mouth sanction that is happening in the country, where you can see there is a lot of those 4 or 5 regions, they have a lot of cattle, but not qualified to be in the beef market. So the investment guiding board or investment board, so they need also to get promoting as local, that there is people that they are also, there is opportunity for the farming that they want to be guiding in terms of foot and mouth diseases. Because if you look at the commercial, where there is a huge land of farming or cattle farming, but the number of cattle are not comparing to the one that is on this other side.
Mm-hmm.
So you needed to be guiding by this. It is also one of the goodest opportunity to the local to put head on and discussing about this with the government, with the board. And also, as I said, in the natural resources, we need also to understand what type of activity do we need to do within the natural resources, or with the mining product, and that is now happening in the handling of the foreigners. Because if you look at 81.9% that is owned by the foreigners, is too much. Mm-hmm. How do you buying power back to that? Yeah, those are the things that they need to point out, instead of just go out there putting the good billboard of Namibian profile, but in the local, people are struggling to get opportunity, which is very a challenge to us. If you look at in those part of the north where there was a lot of business people at the time, as I said, since 1996, people are just failing. Most of local business people are failing to survive in the informal market.
Yeah. I think I want to believe that a lot of our business people are not well educated enough. Like, say, for instance, the launch of the Namibia Investor Guide, which is wonderful, because at the end of the day, we do want foreign investors as well coming to our country and investing, and of course not carrying a huge chunk of the shares with them, but rather also then creating job opportunities and leaving something with us. But then again, I tend to think that we're not doing much for our local investors You sometimes also want to ask yourself questions to see within that room, at the launch of the investor guide, how many local business people were actually invited so that they themselves can get firsthand understanding of how to even begin, whether the thought perhaps so that we can move beyond dreams of them only wishing to invest and not knowing where exactly to begin. So I want to actually believe that I think there needs to be a lot that needs to be done in terms of local investors or domestic investors right here. That is by starting with educating them. What do you think?
Yes. That's a good point, Juju. Because if you look at the NSI, for example, not NSI, NCCI,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was having a lot of members. I remember between the 2008 and somewhere there was a lot of members there. And if you look at now for the Nairobi, what is also one of, I think, the Namibians that are willing to be a part of the economy ventures, but on the look of things, they are just talking. And as I say, we are all not producing, but we are a reseller. So those are now the problems in that. For example, if you look at the AGOA that was happening to Africa, there are not much producing for the African. Yeah, they were not having the handoff, but it's a European companies that are setting up a branch in Africa and then sell it back into the European market or American market. So, but for us Namibians into starting up, initiating our own product and our own ideas on the table, yeah, it's a challengeable, and that's why you pointed out that we need maybe to educate them, we need to informing them that this is what is happening. As I said, there is opportunity of cattle farming, so there is opportunity for you producing some of those vegetables and sending it back into the way it's getting processing in South Africa or in somewhere else. So those are the things that you're needing a partner, because this investment board, when they go outside, they don't marketing us, but they marketing themselves to bring up people, not into taking people out of Namibia and doing business somewhere else. Because this one, they need you also to go to some, if you go to Zambia, for example, you're discussing with a Zambian how about the copper and all of that, how many Zambians are in investing or in venturing in the copper
industry
production. Industry. So those are the type of things that also we are expecting the investment board to do that. So those are now the thing that, as I said, it's not easy for a Namibian to be surviving on this, because it's not your product. You have no power to protect it. No matter how hard we are registering with the BIPA, you might end up registering with that you are protecting, for example, doing toilet papers and other companies can come with the same product. You are buying it and packaging it.
Yeah.
It's not that you are producing it. That is another challenge which we have in this country. And as I said now, if you look at those literals like Chops and others, so they are coming, they are buying bark and packaging in the country and the rebuilt in the country. So which is, Namibians cannot do that. So those are the most important that in the investment board or the most investment guiding board to do that, to telling Namibians, this is where we want him to be protected. And other issue is hard for us into protecting and closing some doors because of free trade that is also happening in Africa. So there is a lot of challenges when it comes to Africa, and that's why I was doing this proposal to say it. Maybe we need to venture with this. Let us maybe look at that. We need land to be owned by Namibians.
Maybe
if you are having money buying the land and then you rent it into those guys so that you can also making money, for buying rent and then you're getting a land out from that. So that is also is a good venture to say, no, we are not locating land into the foreigners. But if you look at in what is happening to China, it's the same that we also wanted to do in Africa. Because in China, the government are protected foreigners more than the local. And that is what is also happening in Africa. We are not look at our people, how they are suffer, how this massive, these people, they are coming with a lot of money. And they know the services that they are serving is needed by the country. And that is what is the problem. And Namibia is one of those countries that have a lot of money. Activity every day. Yeah, the money are circulating every day from villaging to the cities. So to the towns, it's money is everywhere. But it's not in the hand of the Namibians. The service that we are getting is not from us. So those are the problems that no matter you identify that problem, you cannot solve it yourself because somebody come and took over everything.
Interesting. One particular point I will take home is the fact that you did say that the Namibia Investment Promotion Development Board, NIPDB, should go out there and market Namibia, not just try to pull foreigners into our country, but also should market Namibian businesses out there. And you never know, somebody actually might want to partake within our businesses, but the need starts with us marketing our own local businesses. Mr. Andrew,
those are the important things because if you go with these people, for example, is Nairobi now that they are talking about, take them, ask them what do they have in hand. Not to say do we are retailer thing. No, retailer thing is challengeable because the products are not from Namibia. So those are, as I said, you need to sit with these people and say, what do we have in the in those five regions? What do you need to do? What do you are expecting this investment board to do with you outside Namibia? So those are the type of things that is needed to be done.
Okay. Mr. Andrew, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Yeah, you are welcome. You too.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Okay.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 4 kilogram of real good frozen and mixed chicken portions for only 199.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilos of Polana pasta, just 129.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. 700 milliliter crystal gold tomato sauce, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. USave, where good food costs less.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emito da njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka.
Welcome back. In other news, today the Ministry of Health and Social Services officially launched the National Parenting and Caregiver Handbook alongside a complementary facilitator guide, marking a significant step in supporting parents, caregivers and families with evidence-based guidance in order to nurture health, child development and strengthen family bonds across the country. Now, the handbook developed under by the Ministry of Health and Social Services in collaboration with other stakeholders, came together to develop the National Parenting and Caregiver Guide, and it provides parental or practical guidance on positive parenting practices, on child rights, emotional well-being, nurturing a care and child safety. It is designed as a comprehensive resource to enhance caregivers' knowledge and skills in fostering supportive home environments that promote children's physical, cognitive and emotional development. And speaking at the launch, the director of the Ministry of Health and Social Services, that is Apinda Ithindi, noted that how we raise up our children says a lot about their future, and that the future faces uncertainty from all dimensions. Hence, the ministry came together with other system ministries as well, such as the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Sports, Youth and Culture, and as well as the Ministry of Child Welfare. Now, according to the latest reports on the handbook development, the National Parenting and Caregiver Handbook is part of a national strategy to strengthen parents and caregivers' capacities by offering accessible information on child raising practices, on communication, on discipline, on positive interactions, and for the protection of the children against abuse. The handbook responds to the growing recognition in both national policy and international frameworks that responsive caring, caregiving, and early childhood support are essential to children's development and long-term wealth. Hence why it was quite necessary. There was also a panel discussion that was held by the Minister of Gender Equality and Child Welfare, that is Minister Emma Kantemer, as well as other stakeholders. Now, speaking also during the panel discussion was Nicolette Blessinger, and she is the director of Lifeline Childline. Let's take a listen to her.
Like the Honourable Minister rightly said, the Violence Against Children study that was conducted in 2019, the INAMVIA, highlighted one key and very important factor, the lack of parental involvement in the daily lives of our children. So parents come from communities, and what we found and what we experienced as Lifeline Childline, that in communities, the uptake of the parenting role is still very much fragmented. Mothers are still carrying the bulk of the care work, and therefore the involvement in their children's lives. Ms. Yellen Maton, I think, quoted, it takes a village to raise a child. Unfortunately, in our Namibian communities, it's not happening anymore. We are so occupied and absorbed in our own parenting roles and responsibilities, that we don't look out for each other and for our children. And that is very much prevalent and can be seen in various media reports that comes out. Also, I would like to highlight the issue of the involvement of fathers in their homes, but also at community level. So we have this picture of mothers still taking the lead in taking care of their children, and fathers still continue to play a very minimal role in being actively involved in the upbringing of their children. I always say children are the samples of our examples, and that starts at home. Unfortunately, the bigger percentage of homes, of communities, do not give a very good example to children at this stage. And that needs, and that calls for more concerted efforts, more collaboration, more aggressive and aggressive efforts to really strengthen the parenting support system.
Thank you.
And that was Nicolette Blessinger, Director of Lifeline Childline, now also speaking at as a panel at among the panel discussion was Yonise Gabriela Caetano, who is from the Child Parliament and or Children's Parliament, and she gave her contribution in regards to what she thinks is a way a parenting, an effective parent, or who is a parent is. Let's take a listen to her.
I'm looking at my timekeeper, a member of parliament. Would you please share your view on what positive parenting and caregiving look like in the
I believe that when we talk about positive parenting, right, especially like in the Namibian context, from what I've seen that we have a lot of parents, right, that deal with a lot of generational trauma. And because of this, their parenting methods are a bit different compared to Western parents or stuff like that, right? Because we see that with African parents, they're more, their parenting skills are more based on beating, as we say, or physical violence, and that becomes a problem now because now you're dealing with a generation that's more online-based, right? And because we see a lot of things online, we believe that the way that our parents are parenting us isn't working because they're not listening to us, they're not, they don't understand us because the moment that you try and talk to your parent about mental health, it becomes like, oh, you can't say that you're having mental health problems because you have food on the table, you have all of this and this, right? But we need to understand that a parent or parenting doesn't only have to do with safety. It doesn't only have to do with me being fed at the end of the day. It also has to play a role with my mental capacity, right? Because the moment that I don't have any sort of, I don't have good mental health, it also affects my grade at the end of the day. Because as much as I go to a private school every single day and I'm there and my parents aren't there for me emotionally, it becomes a problem, right? So I believe that when we talk about parenting, we also have to understand that as much as this handbook is going to be as much as this handbook is going to be effective, we also need to deal with the main problem, which is the parents. What are we going to do to ensure that these parents are also getting some sort of help from therapists and all of that, right? Because they are going to be the main drivers to make sure that these kids get the right parenting tools, right? So we need to make sure that what are we going to do with the parents? What's going to happen to them? Are they going to go for therapy? Are these parents also going to get some sort of handbook that's going to help them teach these kids? Because as much as we have things like good health, providing emotional stability for this child, what about the parent themselves? Because at the end of the day, they also need help. So I believe that that is one positive.
Among the panel discussions also was one of the trainers who was also awarded a certification of master trainings, who then also will be a facilitator guider in terms of this National Parenting and Caregiver Handbook. And he did speak about absent fathers and how that also affects children in the long run. Let's take a listen.
The mere fact that
okay, let's pause here now and we'll be back shortly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana konongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa.
Let's now take a listen to this facilitator guide.
With seeing parenting in its correct perspective, or so to speak, in a perspective so introduced by this national manual we are launching today, in universities, in schools, we all of us going for studies. But a parent never goes to a school to be capacitated. And this manual coming out now is a jewel from a Namibian point of view. It helped me a lot as an African father, so to speak, and one would relate to what the African father would have been. It has totally transformed my perspective as to how to be a father. We are not looking for perfect parents, but it definitely made me a better parent, as I usually understood, as my colleague next to me rightfully said, that for me parenting was just about producing them, feeding them, sending them to school and controlling them. I never knew that there is such a vast perspectives around parenting towards which I was exposed for the past 10 years, going through parenting classes and doing, facilitating positive parenting myself. My children and grandchildren could not recognize me. What happened to this African father? He's not shouting too much anymore. He's not throwing us the shoes. He's not looking for his belt. What happened to this man?
And with that, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We're back to continue. Stay with us right here on the Reading is Analysis.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
They never perhaps understand that I went through many of these topics discussed in this book we are launching today, and it really shaped my perspective of parenting in its broader context, as raising a child has to do with considering the emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual health of the child. So definitely this National Parenting Handbook should reach every corner of this country so that we can shape opinions and perspectives around the holistic parenting of our children. As a father, I would like to make a few contributions. Speaking about the fatherlessness problem or absent father issue we might have and we are facing currently. Yeah, definitely there might be some reasons and some issues for absent fathers. And it is an issue that we also need to confront and therefore discuss. Absent father could come from relationship breakdowns, which then rob, so to speak, a child from having a father which is present in his or her life. Economic pressure and migration might also contribute to, so to speak, absent fathers, unplanned and early parenthood. That is definitely one of the elements who contribute to fatherlessness when that father have to deal with the responsibility coming with the father, and then he's not there anymore. Definitely a very big problem is that absent fathers unfortunately breeds absent fathers. And lastly, substance abuse would totally disrupt the ability of maintaining responsible parenting. So these issues definitely needs to be considered and addressed when it comes to fatherlessness or absent fathers. Because the father in the child life is so much important. In the lifeline domain, when we deal with counseling, especially with boys, you would discover that the father was absent.
Thank you very much.
Now, the National Parenting and Caregiver Handbook, along with a facilitated guide, equips parents with valuable strategies in order to help support their children and nurture them into responsible adults. A key aspect of effective parenting is applying the handbook's advice, not just to children, but also to themselves, especially when facing challenging circumstances, strong feelings, or trauma. So parenting is an ongoing journey, and one doesn't have to go through it alone. Now, first off, its guide, it's in three or four volumes, and the first one actually deals with parents' reflection. So making a reflection, a parent making reflection themselves about obviously perhaps the way they were brought up, and trying to do better perhaps in terms of their parenting skills. Now, one thing that the Minister of Health and Social Services, Esperance Luvindao, mentioned or asked was to see, are this a facilitator guide, or are this parenting guide, caregiver guide, National Parenting and Caregiver Guide, translated in vernacular languages? And the answer was not yet. And she emphasized on why it's very important and necessary, so as the people at local level or community level, grassroots level, can really understand what is being given out there to people at urban level, so that it can be decentralized. Now, of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Reading News Analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Should you be interested in airing your opinions, contributions, or asking questions, come through on 083-288-401. Now, let's pause here. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for some economic indicators before we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, $1 today is equals to 16.37 Namibian dollars, and $1 is equals to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.54 cents. €1 is equals to 18 Namibian dollars, 0.98 cents. €1 dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 46 cents. £1 is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 91 cents. And £1 is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. We pause now here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll bring you news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushe indife nawa nukumona oijemo ili nawa. Inge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, vera hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, eigeleza, vi ae.
Welcome back, and now we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. We always start off regionally, move over to continental news, and thereafter international news comes your way. Of course, we're starting off in South Africa as the Cape Town International Convention Center hosts Africa Energy in Durban. Let's take a listen to that.
President Cyril Ramaphosa has just wrapped up an address before the Africa Energy Indaba. The gathering is being held at the International Convention Center in Cape Town. The Indaba provides an annual program that shapes energy policy for the African continent. Watching developments for us, there's SABC News reporter Vanessa Puno joins us now live from the Cape Town International Convention Center. And Vanessa, I saw the president also taking a moment to address journalists on the sidelines of that gathering. What did he say?
Yes, good morning to you. And what the president said, also reflected earlier on in his speech here to the Energy Indaba, was that Africa is energy rich, but yet its people are energy poor. He was talking, for example, about the continent holding 60% of solar energy, as well as substantial reserves of gas and oil reserves. And speaking to us just now, we've asked him questions around the situation in the Middle East, particularly because he was saying that this moment in time provides an opportunity for the continent to expand its energy ambitions as well as initiatives. Now, he told us a short while ago that he thinks that the situation in the Middle East is untenable. He said that what is happening is extremely concerning. A colleague of mine asked him whether he will indeed reach out to Donald Trump, the American president. He did say that South Africa and DERCO, in particular, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, is on the ground reassuring South Africans stuck at the moment in the countries in the Middle East, including the UAE, that they will be assisted as soon as airspace opens. So just to know that the South African government does indeed care about them. He was talking about, we asked him about shipping along South Africa's coastline and increased maritime activity given the war and the current conflict in the Middle East, also the situation with the Straits of Hormuz. And he was saying that South Africa is well positioned to handle an increase in maritime traffic, and that usually when there are issues and security concerns around the world, that South African waters remain a safe space. I mean, he just concluded speaking to us a short while ago, and at the moment there is a break in the proceedings here at the Energy Indaba. It is the 18th year that this Energy Indaba is taking place. And I can tell you that what the president said on a lighter note earlier on is that he smells money. And of course, investment into energy resilience is the key focus area here. And also to ensure that while Africa at this point in time still have millions of people not having access to electricity, but saying that Africa should be at the forefront, especially now to develop energy initiatives and to make sure that each and every African citizen indeed has energy security.
It's a timely gathering, Vanessa, of course, especially when you consider what's taking place in the Middle East and the energy-related concerns. For example, if the Strait of Hormuz is inaccessible for prolonged periods of time, we know that there'll be concerns around energy accessibility when it comes to LNG and other things which may very well hit the global north. Has the president spoken at all about what this might mean for the continent? I saw even the electricity minister giving an address just before Ramaphosa took to the podium.
Yes, he did. He actually said that this conference comes at an opportune time, at a time when Africa stands really in at the forefront to be able to reach and to pursue its energy ambitions. And because, like you've just said now, the conflict in the Middle East at the moment provides for South Africa, or for Africa, to tap into its energy reserves. I mean, he was talking about, I mentioned there just now, solar, for example. He was talking about another aspect that South Africa is rich in, and that is critical minerals that is also needed for technology as well as energy across the world, saying that now is the time for Africa to essentially, if you will, not his words, mine, to cash in on the reserves that we do have, and that it's well positioned at this point in time, given the conflict that at this point seems to be escalating and escalating quite rapidly, saying that Africa now stands at the brink of reaching its energy ambitions.
Still in South Africa, Northwest Department of Agriculture on efforts to curb the foot and mouth disease spread that is within South Africa.
The Northwest Department of Agriculture's MEC in Matota Sambata is currently giving an update on the availability and distribution of the foot and mouth disease vaccine in that province. And this will be followed by a vaccination process at one of the most affected farms in Potchefstroom. That process is underway. Let's listen in.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Okay, welcome back, and let's get right into the news we're covering before that.
And to SAPRA, remember, SAPRA still comes in to approve and regulate. Those that have been approved internationally, dominantly Argentina, Brazil, Turkey, and others, are supplying us through national, because national procures for everyone and then distributes proportionally. Proportionally means according to the number of impacted provinces, which means if you look to the scale, we are affected, but our infection constitutes 5% of the national infection, which means KZN is expected and receiving the highest number of vaccines compared to us, because the number of infection is very high. You can even check that thing. Gauteng, it's less than half of our total number of cattle we have. We have 1.4 million, they've close to 500,000. But the rate of the impact by the disease, by the spread is higher in Gauteng than us. Then on the basis of intervention to respond to the spread, Gauteng gets higher than us, because the first thing you are dealing with, you are not starting with the head as a whole. You're starting with areas where your spread is still active as a basis to intervene to reduce the spread. In that instance, we would get 5%, because our spread is 5% on the national basis. But the number, when we are to be counted, we are going to be number 4 nationally on dealing with the whole number of the expected vaccines. Here's the common area here. It's very difficult to impose quarantine measures in communal areas. And this is a lesson where agriculture departments must then learn on how quarantine measures could be possible in the future in communal areas. Because grazing is communal. Access to livestock water is communal. So when one is affected and you impose...
Matota Sambata is the agriculture in the Northwest is giving a media briefing about around the interventions in that province in order to curb the spread of the foot and mouth disease. Vaccines, you know, are the big talking point, and several, we're told, will be made available in the coming weeks.
Meanwhile, Ugandan workers are stranded after the Middle East airspace is closed.
For Munira Nasamla, a certified nurse, the journey to Dubai had already begun. She was airborne and heading to start a new job when the captain announced the flight was turning back.
We were like 16 members. We went to the airport. We did the check-ins and everything. So we entered and boarded. When we boarded, everything was fine. We were like, the aeroplane took off. So as we were crossing, I think it was Ethiopia, we were crossing to Ethiopia, so the pilot did a communication that we are turning back to Entebbe Airport. I didn't hear the reason he gave.
The aircraft returned safely after airspace along the route was closed due to rising tensions in the Middle East. At Uganda's main international gateway, several flights to Gulf destinations have since been cancelled or delayed.
Certainly, such a disruption is not good because it does not only affect air transport, but it affects the entire economy. Because certainly this comes with loss of revenue for many players, including all those in the tourism chain, among others. So we only pray that this situation does not take too long. And remember, the Middle East is one of the major destinations for passengers originating from this region. It's among the top three.
Uganda sends more than 160,000 workers to the Gulf region each year, mainly for domestic and security jobs. Recruitment agencies say the disruption is affecting the entire migration chain.
We have so many partners in this migration, starting from the medicals, the airlines, so many. Police clearances, the passports, the interposts. It's like the case we had in COVID. I think if you are to reflect the impact that COVID brought, where the airspace was closed and, you know, almost everybody was down. So you can imagine. But for me, directly I'm hit because as we speak, I'm not working. I only work once I've cleared at the airport.
Many workers who were preparing to travel are now waiting for new schedules, unsure when departures will resume. Munira says the experience has left her disappointed and uncertain about her plans.
Me and my colleagues, most of them, it was our first time to fly, and it was our first time entering Dubai, so we were all excited, but when it turned, we all got disappointed.
Figures from the Bank of Uganda show diaspora remittances grew to $1.6 billion in 2025, up from $1.4 billion in 2024. Officials warn that prolonged disruption could affect families who depend on that income. Mike Obaleke, CGTN, Kampala.
Still in Uganda, Ugandan farmers turn to digital tools in order to boost yields.
Maureen Namutebi tends to her small urban farm just outside Kampala. For years, she has battled stubborn pests and crop diseases. Even after applying different chemicals and trying organic alternatives, her yields keep dropping. Her vegetable garden is her main source of income, but keeping it productive has become harder.
All the pesticides that are internationally banned is what is being sold, and that's what is on the market. And then you look for natural ways of trying to fight all of these pesticides, like we harvest rabbit urine, and we mix it with ash, and then we spray just to try to get something that's more organic, and we move away. But there are some pests that you just have to spray.
Many farmers here face similar risks, from unsafe chemicals to limited knowledge about best farming practices. That gap has created space for digital solutions like the Omea mobile tool. With a basic feature phone, farmers can dial a code and access real-time advice from where to buy certified inputs to how to manage crops and livestock. The goal is simple: to improve productivity and incomes.
A farmer with their small feature phone, they're able to dial the code that I mentioned, *284*173#. So it brings a menu of our products and services that can, whether you need a crop production input or a livestock production input, or you need to market what you've produced, or you need to access extension services, or you just need to simply talk to someone at Omi Agribusiness about a challenge.
Agriculture contributes about 24% to Uganda's GDP and remains the backbone of rural livelihoods. The government is promoting climate-smart farming to boost food production sustainably. At the same time, private platforms are stepping in. Easy Agric, for example, connects farmers to verified agricultural products through a smartphone app. Once farmers place an order, supplies are delivered directly to them.
What we found out that 86% of our customers, that means that the farmers and agribusinesses, improved their yield. They doubled their yield from the same piece of land without increasing the size of the land. That means that if someone was getting 10 bags on one single acre, they were getting 20 bags on the single acre. And most of them attributed it on the genuine agricultural inputs.
For farmers like Namutebi, access to reliable information and trusted inputs could make the difference between profit and loss. As climate pressures intensify and food prices remain volatile, experts say digital agriculture could strengthen resilience not just in Uganda but across Africa. The question is now how quickly these tools can reach the farmers who need them most. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala, Uganda.
Meanwhile, Cote d'Ivoire cashew farmers protest for lower prices.
It's harvest season in Cote d'Ivoire, but this season isn't all good for the country's many cashew farmers. A government price adjustment for the 2026 marketing season has seen farm gate price fall by as much as 6%.
I just sold 400 kilos of cashews today for 160,000 CFA francs, whereas last year I would have got 170,000 CFA francs. So I have lost 10,000 CFA francs. The money I've just received isn't enough to cover all my expenses at the moment.
The farm gate price is the amount of money a farmer receives for their produce directly at the farm before marketing, transportation, or processing costs are added. Experts say the model allows for better price controls and improves income predictability. Ivorian officials call February's price edit a prudent move aimed at matching tough international conditions. But for farmers like Adama, every lost franc is eroding what they take home.
We are currently in the month of Ramadan, the Muslim fasting period, and there are many expenses. We have to pay for sugar, rice, and other items so that we can eat well at 5 a.m. and get through this period in the best possible way.
As the world's top producer, Cote d'Ivoire harvested roughly 1.5 million tons of raw cashew nuts in recent seasons. It exported the bulk of it, roughly 850,000 tons, primarily to processors in Vietnam and India. Farm prices rise and fall with global demand, shipping costs, exchange rates, and competition from neighbors like Burkina Faso and Ghana. Farmers feel these forces most acutely with little say in them. Until the sector switches up to more modern methods, experts say the farmers will continue to feel the pinch.
Cote d'Ivoire is an agricultural powerhouse, but not an agro-industry one. It means to make the transition from agricultural powerhouse to agro-industrial powerhouse. This will increase producers' incomes, add value and create new opportunities.
Amid international market uncertainties and rising local costs, producers are hoping that stronger local processing and better harvests ahead will help restore their incomes. Because for every kilogram sold, there's a household relying on it. Najma Abdulrazak, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Zambia has launched a Brent Zambia initiative.
As Zambia positions itself as a key player in Southern Africa, the concept of Brand Zambia has moved from a marketing buzzword to a critical economic strategy. President Hichilema has officially launched the Brand Zambia Day, a new initiative designed to elevate the nation's image, boost tourism, and promote the country locally and internationally. At a ceremony held in Lusaka, government officials, corporate leaders, and creatives gathered to mark a new chapter in national marketing. President Hichilema said the launch of Zambia's rebranded identity emphasizes national unity, diversity, and economic potential.
Zambia has strong potential in business, various sectors, yes, mining, you can see the branding is talking about our copper, the color, but mining is not just copper in this country. I'm happy to let people believe that it's only copper, but we are cooking a lot of other things. Emeralds. We are now the leading producers of emeralds in the world. Right? We have overtaken Colombia, so to say. But we're not bringing this into the fray properly. We are endowed with lots of other minerals. Yes, we talk of 1 million tons of copper this year. We talk of 3 million tons of copper. It's deliberate so that we can keep cooking other things, emeralds, you know, critical minerals, other minerals. As Minister Mantashe at the mining interview reminded us in Cape Town that all minerals are critical. Iron is critical. You want to have iron and steel, you want to have steel, you need iron in there. So they are all critical, and I agree with him.
The president said the rebranding project, initiated in 2024, highlights Zambia's strengths in areas such as mining and tourism.
2024, we asked our colleagues in the ministries, relevant ministries, our partners in the UNDP, to work on this, if you like, rebranding or reimagining Zambia. Because when we took public office, we realized that Zambians were looking down when they were walking. Instead of looking up, they were looking down. And personally, I don't like people who look down, who, resigned to loss, of whatever kind of loss. I would like to see people who are buoyant, people who believe that they can achieve, they can deliver, irrespective of the circumstances under which they operate. And, we were walking with shame, a debt-ridden country, a basket case, a defaulting country. The first country to default was this country. And I'm talking of debt service obligations. So it means we were living beyond our means, and we kept on consuming, and acquiring debts, liabilities, known and contingent liabilities, irresponsible. Of course, citizens were downcast. And one of our jobs was to lift up the spirits of the people of Zambia, that they can walk with pride. Pride doesn't mean arrogance. Please, let's distinguish the two. Pride does not mean arrogance. Certainly from where I sit, the two are not synonymous, but pride, knowing that you are somebody, we are people, we are a country that God chose to put together people, 72 ethnic groups. And I'll be commenting about that just now. This is really a fantastic, a powerful, you know, endowment that we ought to be proud of.
President Hijilema called on citizens to internalize the brand and foster local business partnerships.
The new national brand, we appreciate using this unified brand as a people, crafted to attract investments. But first, gluing ourselves together inside. Remember I said, looking at Zambia from inside and from outside. We must glue ourselves together first. Citizens, partners, diplomatic corps, ambassadors, high commissioners are part of this glue. Madam Mutale and our friend there, you are part of this glue. Because you live with us here, you work with us, you live with us. Yes, your UN system. But this is our UN system. It's not an alien to us. We glue ourselves together. Consensus building is very important through research, through science, as we have seen. Then we can glue the partners in the SADC region, East African Community, ECOWAS, North Africa, Africa, and the world. Certainly, that's the way I see things.
The president also signed a pledge wall as a demonstration of his commitment to continue building and promoting the brand. Sharon Siame, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
And now for some international news. Qatar has shut down two energy facilities after being damaged in the Iranian strike.
Qatar shut down two major energy facilities after they were damaged in Iranian airstrikes. It halted production of liquefied natural gas on Monday, sending prices skyrocketing, and has also paused production of downstream natural gas products.
The damage was contained, and now the operations to assess technically the safety of the facilities is underway. And from the defensive posture, of course, as you have seen, we have been ready in monitoring and dealing with all of these attacks.
He says Qatar's committed to de-escalating the situation, adding that it's not had contact with Tehran since U.S.-Israel strikes on Iran began on Saturday. Qatar's diplomatic stance has always been firm and clear, committed to peace, actively promoting de-escalation, advocating dialogue and consultation, and striving to resolve the conflict peacefully. Several other major producers have also shut down production along the Gulf Coast amid the intensifying conflict between Iran and the United States.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump tells Iran that it's too late to talk as Israel launches a strike on Beirut and Tehran.
Hello, you're live with BBC News. I'm Anna Foster in the Jordanian capital, Amman. And in the escalating war with Iran, Israel has launched fresh strikes on Tehran and on the Lebanese capital, Beirut. These are live pictures that we can show you right now of the skyline in Beirut. We've seen throughout the day today those plumes of dark smoke rising into the sky with the Mediterranean Sea in the background there. Now, Israel has also sent ground troops into Lebanon to seize what it calls strategic areas, it says, to prevent attacks being launched at border communities.
But all of this comes, as we know, as Iran is continuing to strike back by targeting a number of Gulf states across the region, including Bahrain and Qatar. And drones have struck the U.S. embassy in Saudi Arabia overnight. President Trump saying today that Tehran wanted to talk, but it was, quote, too late.
The Iranian Red Crescent says 787 people have been killed in the country. And in a moment, we'll hear from our correspondents in Beirut and in Tel Aviv. But first, this report from Alison Freeman.
The strikes on Iran continue on what is now the fourth day of action by the US and Israel. The Iranian Red Crescent says the death toll there has reached almost 800. And as shown by these pictures released by the IDF, the offensive by the Israelis has also stepped up in Beirut to tackle the Iran-backed Hezbollah. This morning, the Israeli government announced it was sending troops in to take strategic areas. Iran has been striking back. This footage showing what appears to be Iranian missiles in the sky above Doha being intercepted. The streets of Riyadh are quieter due to the threat. Saudi Arabia's Ministry of Defense confirming that the US embassy there was attacked by two Iranian drones. And in Erbil, in northern Iraq, home to a US airbase, this footage from social media shows where a fragment of what's thought to be a drone tore through the roof of a residential building, landing in a family's apartment. The Americans say they're working through a list of military targets, filming their destruction of a missile launcher. And this satellite image shows an Iranian naval vessel on fire inside the sea wall in the port of Bandar Abbas. The US says there is still more action planned.
I'm not going to give away the details of our tactical efforts, but the hardest hits are yet to come from the US military. The next phase will be even more punishing on Iran than it is right now. Someone was screaming, how long will it take? I don't know how long it'll take. We have objectives. We will do this as long as it takes to achieve those objectives, and we will achieve those objectives. The world will be a safer place when we're done with this operation.
Oil and gas prices have surged as Iran's retaliation across the Middle East continues. Ras Tanura, the Saudis' biggest oil refinery, was hit and forced to close. Around a fifth of the world's oil and gas pass through here, one of the world's most important shipping routes, the Strait of Hormuz. But an Iranian official has now warned that any ship who tries to pass through will be set on fire. The Iranians argue their retaliation is measured.
We target only the military objectives of the hostile forces. We don't target civilians. We don't target the interests of neighboring states under international law. Every state has a duty not to allow its territory to be used for act of aggression against another state.
There's also been a warning of an ongoing security threat at the UK's RAF base at Akrotiri in Cyprus after two drones were intercepted there on Monday. The conflict is coming at a cost to the Israelis too. People gathered in Jerusalem to mourn the deaths of three teenagers. But the Israeli government says it has no choice.
After we hit their nuclear sites and their ballistic missiles program, you'd think they learned a lesson. But they didn't, because they're unreformable. They're totally fanatic about this, about the goal of destroying America.
And the U.S. government remains resolute about its continuing military action.
There's just no way that Donald Trump is going to allow this country to get into a multi-year conflict with no clear end in sight and no clear objective.
For now, though, the conflict continues with no sign of a ceasefire. Alison Freeman, BBC News.
Well, as this war continues to grow, we're bringing you the very latest from right across the Middle East region. I want to take you, first of all, to Lebanon and to Israel. Our correspondent Wira Davis is in Beirut and Hugo Bishega is in Tel Aviv. Wira, there has been a delicate, fairly unsteady ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon since the war at the end of 2024. But what you've been seeing over the last 24 hours or so is right back, isn't it, to that wartime situation?
Yeah, hi Anna. And I think any hope on the ground here that this may be a very temporary break of that ceasefire has been dashed both by what the Israeli government says it now intends to do against Hezbollah in Lebanon, and also the realities on the ground. Overnight last night and again today, there have been numerous airstrikes, particularly in the southern parts of Beirut, an area known as Dahiyeh, a Hezbollah stronghold. Israel says it's not only targeting senior Hezbollah figures, but also institutions, particularly financial institutions linked to Hezbollah, which Israel says the militant group, the Shia militant group, is using to finance terror operations and has been doing that for many years. Israel does seem to be determined to crush and defeat Hezbollah once and for all, perhaps not trusting the Lebanese government to uphold its part of the ceasefire deal and disarm Hezbollah. Of course, most people here in Lebanon are very angry that Hezbollah decided to retaliate for those attacks on Iran in the way it did by continuing to fire rockets and missiles into Israel. And the two other things that are happening now as a consequence of this continued action is that about 30,000 people have been internally displaced since the start of the attacks here 3 days ago. And of course, the Lebanese government is anticipating that the Israelis will move now in, will start an incursion into southern Lebanon in the coming hours and days to try and stop those Hezbollah attacks against northern Israel. So a lot going on, but I think no sense here that this is a temporary measure. A lot of people here expect this fighting and these airstrikes to last for quite a few days.
Wera, thank you. That's Wera Davis, our correspondent in Beirut. Hugo Bishaga is in Tel Aviv. Hugo, are those regular barrages of Iranian missiles heading towards Israel continuing?
Yeah, and it's been a relatively quieter day today. We have heard the air raid alerts multiple times across the country, but there haven't been reports of major injuries or significant damage caused by those missiles that have been fired by Iran. Now, on the other hand, Israel has continued to attack Iran, and in the last hour, there have been reports that one of the targets hit in Tehran was the building of the Assembly of Experts, which is the group of clerics that will select the new supreme leader. So we're still trying to waiting for more details about what exactly happened there. And we see that Iran has continued to respond. And earlier today, an Iranian drone hit the American embassy in Saudi Arabia. And obviously, Americans have been urged to leave this region, to essentially leave the Middle East, even though there's a lot of travel disruption because lots of airports remain closed. The airspace of a number of countries also closed because of these attacks. And we haven't heard from President Trump, from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a clear plan, a clear, clear objectives for this conflict. We've heard from President Trump yesterday, who said that this conflict could last 4-5 weeks. The indications from Israeli officials is that this could be a prolonged conflict. They've been talking about regime change in Iran, and we're not seeing any kind of off-ramp in this conflict, any kind of opportunity to see a de-escalation in this conflict.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loise Shimi, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut comes your way at 16:30, and the Business Economic segment comes your way at 1800 hours with David Chombe. Don't forget to subscribe to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel to receive your tri-weekly dose of economic news. So the Villager e-paper is out tomorrow on Wednesday and again on Friday.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni mandu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nuku tete opoe ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabu ili nawa ninge Patafanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Hairi, Nola Natu, Hairi Bali, no hair, Ileko, Berewa, Murahetatu, Natu, Bali, or Hotato, Omaka,
Zaitanina, Omeaburo, Niranitoma, Yue, Yongeshi Fayo, Kupitramo, Eagle FM Media House, Gwe 20 Meneha, Uka Kombanga Nena. Kara omkwashi pareki uimo po yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, kodara heta tuimo. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, bro aye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is...